Well, we have a full house today. As Justice Bradley said to me before he walked in, well, it means jacks are better to open.
I said jacks are better to open, so who's going to open? Maybe a king or an ace out there.
That's right. In order to get through everything that we have to get through today, I'm going to put some time limits on the speakers, and we'll all try to abide by them. Otherwise, I just don't think we're going to be able to give people the hearing that they've come to have this morning. And we're going to begin with 1403, petition 1403. I'm going to read the people that are on my agenda to speak, and if there's somebody else that hasn't signed up, if you would let me know, that would help in our trying to allocate enough time for everybody to be heard on these matters. We're going to start out with Judge Wirtz, then Judge Sankovic, Judge Koshnick, Teresa Russell, Robert Dreffs, Bob Barrington, Lynn Karen, Catherine Crestville, and that's the extent of my list. Is there anybody here that would like to be able to speak on this first petition that I haven't read your name? Ms. Mansfield. Marcia Mansfield, you are on the list. Well, she's not on my list. Oh, there's a new list. They gave me a new one today. Okay, thank you. And I have somebody else who, Carla Robinson, is going to speak rather than Teresa Russell. Is that correct? All right, so with those amendments then. So we have a total of 9 speakers on this first matter today. So what I'm going to do is, Judge Wirtz, I'm going to give you 15 minutes because you are the major presenter. If it's not your plan to use it in that way, and I see other presenters are Judge Sankovic and Judge Koshnick, that's fine. I am going to give each of them 10 minutes. So if you don't need all of your minutes, that's fine, okay? I looked at the materials written that you had submitted, and you have submitted a great number of things in regard to this, so I assumed you were going to be the major presenter. As I'm speaking to you, I'm getting the feeling that isn't what your plan is. But allot that much time. If you don't use it, that's fine. It can be ceded to other people who are presenters. All of those other people on my list, okay, beginning with Carla Robinson, so everybody except the 3 judges, I will allot you 5 minutes, okay? Otherwise, we're just not going to get through, and this is not the only matter that's of significant importance this morning that we have on for hearing. So let's see if we can do that so we can get through everything that we need to get through, and everybody that's here will have an opportunity to speak. So, Judge Wirtz, we will begin with you with petition 1403.
Thank you. Good morning.
I'm sorry, but the microphone system is not working.
Can you hear me better?
I can hear you, but you're not really amplified. I'm just assuming I'm hearing your normal voice.
Yeah, my
and
speaker
I'm not
works.
Hearing
you know,
through
you might
the box
on
either.
On the right-hand side, there's a button if you underneath. Tina, you want to raise the podium a little bit for him? That may help. I don't know.
And then your voice, it'll be closer.
Okay.
Underneath.
Okay. No? I think the marshal is fixing the amplification, okay. Hopefully, for all of us. So.
All right. Thank you and good morning, Chief Justice Rogensack and Justices of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I'm Bob Wirtz. I'm here as the chair of the e-filing subcommittee of the Committee of Chief Judges, here to implore you to accept this petition for e-filing. And you're right, Chief Justice, my intent was to give a very brief overview and then cede most of the time the substantive issues and the money issues to Judge Sankovic and to Judge Koshnick. Okay. And with that, let me give you this brief overview. We've gotten to this point by a previous petition, a lot of study from members of court operations, and we're at a point that we need to make a decision, and we hope that you can make a decision today and move this forward. I think there are probably three main points that may be of some concern that these fine judges to my right are going to address with you, but let me just cover them very briefly right now. Within the body of some of the comments to the rule, there's some language about substantive changes, and it certainly wasn't the intent, nor was there any kind of connotation that there would be any substantive changes to litigants' rights. And I think it might be best if we simply take that adjective and that word out of those comments. I think what was really meant by that is there are some notable or changes that are probably of a highlight to the rules. Secondly, I know that there's a concern probably amongst the justices with regard to questions about access to justice and issues of money. Legal Action filed a letter February 19th, discussing some potential language and modification to the rule. We accept that. We think that's probably a good idea. And while there is in place fee waiver provisions, if they want that language, we think that's a good idea for fee waivers for both plaintiffs and defendants, and we accept that as a good idea. And thirdly, there's probably an issue amongst the justices about the issue of funding and money. And certainly that's the task I think we were given when we left the last time and came back this time. And as a wise person once said, there is no free lunch. And we need to pay for this system somehow. They're going to discuss the details of that, but
who's going to discuss the details?
Judge Stankovitz.
And is he going to discuss the Jean Busquette's implementation and fee information filed February 18?
He will.
Terrific.
Yes. But I think the short message and overview for that is this. It can either be paid for by users, or it can be paid for by the state. Well, the state didn't give us money, and so we're in the position of how do we come up with a system that can implement e-filing. And the method that was investigated was, well, let's take a look at private vendors. And Jean Busquette and her people looked at all of the other states and how they do it. And it's either paid for by private vendors in which the lawyers pay a significantly greater amount than the lawyers would under our system, or it's paid for by state money. That system was not considered to be a very good system. We don't have any control over that. And the amount paid for by those vendors and the service that they would provide to us would be nothing compared to what CCAP could do and what Jean Busquette could do. So the ultimate conclusion was the proposal that you have with $20 for these lawyers to pay, the private lawyers to pay, and frankly, it is embraced by the bar. It is embraced.
But the lawyers don't pay the fee. The clients do, and it's a billable cost. It's a cost that's billed at the end to the loser. So the loser will pay $40. And you said this is a fee on the users, but as I read the material, the users are the county, which is going to benefit, not tomorrow, but the day after and thereafter, and the lawyers benefit. But the lawyers don't pay the fee. Their clients do, and then the loser does, and the counties won't support this if they have to pay anything.
Well, with regard to the lawyers, this is a cost of running an office the same as postage and other things that are allowed as a cost. And I think the conclusion ultimately is that this proposal is supported by them and is in fact a workable situation.
But the difference, I think, and that's why I'm asking now so Judge Stankovitz can think this through, the difference is lawyers can bill their client for postage, for duplicating, for mailing, for anything they want.
Far in excess of $40.
But it's not necessarily a billable cost to the loser. And this is. So I'm not an expert on billable costs. It's been a long time since I've put out a bill of costs. But that's the issue for me, or an issue for me.
Fair enough. I'll let Judge Stankovitz cover that.
Good.
But my parting comment about that is, if a plaintiff pays $20 for that, that isn't a significant billable cost compared to some other billable costs.
Right. But the plaintiff won't pay unless the plaintiff loses.
Yeah, yeah.
As I understand it.
One side or the other will have a potential billable
and
cost.
So Judge Stankovitz has a chance to think about it. If it's not too much for $20 for a plaintiff, why isn't it insignificant to charge the lawyer a $20 assessment fee? And that would bring in roughly $400,000 a year? I've forgotten how many zeros, but 20,000 lawyers times $20 fee is a lot of money. And simple. You just put it on the state bar bill.
Well, in an individual basis, in an individual case, I don't think that this is a deal killer.
I'm sorry.
I don't believe it's a deal killer. But I said I would give you a brief overview and then turn it over to Judge Stankovitz and Judge Koshnick. And I think the reason we're back here and what I would advocate and ask you to do is this. See where we are, where we've come, and where we really need to go. We need to move now. We're floating in a sea right now, which is not very efficient. We're in a paper world. We're in this paperless world where we're not truly e-filing. We're scanning documents in that we can look at electronically. That in and of itself is not a very efficient system. And we really need to reap the benefit of the efficiency of e-filing by moving forward and doing this. There's, frankly, money tied up right now in moving this project forward. And if we don't make a decision and move forward with it, we really aren't benefiting, frankly, everybody in the court system, the litigants, the lawyers, the judges, but everybody who's part of it, including the public. So that's my general message to you. I believe that we have covered a lot of the things that various people have written to you about, and we accept a number of those changes. And Judge Stankovitz will cover with you, I believe, the money issues, and Judge Koshnick, those issues about changes that are in the rule. And I thank you very much.
Judge Wirtz, I want to say thank you to you and to the Committee of Chief Judges for hanging in there and doing a really outstanding job in analyzing this and presenting it to the court. I voted for mandatory e-filing, was it 2 years ago, when it came before the court. As I wrote in my comments, I favor it now. This is the wave of, it's not really the wave of the future. We're catching up with the past. So I think that this is very important for the court system as a whole. I think it will benefit the people of this state, but the financial benefit will go to the counties, which is fine. I knew that. When we put in the budget items, and we just have to see what is the best way of funding this under these circumstances. So I really want to thank you and everyone who has worked so hard on this.
Thank you, and since we're on the record, I really think that there's a lot of thanks that ought to go to a lot of behind-the-scenes people who've...
Well, I think so, too, but I don't see any of them standing up here and any of them speaking. So I see Dennis Moran here. He's in charge. He ought to be telling us about what his plans are. And I see Jean Busquette.
Yep.
Yep, I got my glasses on. And she ought to be telling it, to us. Now, she filed this, and I asked Julie to put it on the Internet. Otherwise, it gets lost. Julie, has that been done?
Okay, let's proceed to the next speaker, okay?
Thank you. It will be.
Thank you very much, Judge
Wirtz.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief and Justices.
Judge, if I may, to whom should I direct questions about individual provisions?
I believe Judge Koshnick.
Ooh. Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Good question.
Yeah.
Good morning, Justices. I'm Rick Sankovitz. I'm a circuit judge in Milwaukee County. I'm happy to be here, and I hope what we have for you today will please you. I'm glad to know the secret of the podium here. I'm just wondering if this is like the microphone at the Oscar ceremony when my time's up, it'll just disappear down into the ground.
No, we're not quite that technologically
savvy. As Judge Wirtz said, I'm here to... As Judge Wirtz said, I'm here to talk today about what it's going to cost to build the e-filing infrastructure that we need and that actually the court is behind, and we're appreciative of that, and also how we're going to pay for it. I have three bits of experience that I have to offer here that I think made me the person who drew the short straw for this part of the presentation. First of all, I've presided over more than 100 cases where parties have e-filed. That's how popular it is in Milwaukee. Secondly, I've been working for the last four years now.
What kind of cases? Civil? Criminal?
All civil. I'm on a civil rotation in Milwaukee right now.
Good.
Thank you. Actually, I should say there's a couple family cases in there as well that I got by virtue of being the duty judge. We hear both family and civil cases on our duty assignment. Secondly, I've spent the last 4 years recruiting lawyers and law firms and other frequent flyers to file electronically, to do that voluntarily. For example, I recruited American Family, who files a lot of claims in Milwaukee County Circuit Court, to file them electronically. Now, they don't file all their claims electronically yet, but two lawyers are completely paperless in that office in Waukesha for all their filings in Milwaukee County. And third, I was the one who had to make the pitch to the state bar to get the bar behind this proposal. I'm happy to report to you today, if you're interested, what they had to say about our proposal and how we're going to pay for it. And I'm happy to report that they gave us their unanimous support.
What did you tell them?
Everything that we told you. We gave them the petition. We gave them the pitch about how we're going to pay for it, what it's going to do, what advantages.
What pitch did you give them about how to pay for it?
Well, let's talk about that, okay? I'm happy to talk
Good
about
idea.
That. Justice Abramson, I think, is on board with the idea of having a user fee to pay for this. If you look at the research that Marsha Vandercook did for us, this 50-state survey, it's kind of one of those surveys we give law clerks to do, right? She went out on a 50-state survey, looked at every state in the nation and the federal government. There's only four ways to pay for e-filing. One is to have the legislature make a capital investment in the future of the courts and the services to our constituents, and spread the cost of that out over the tax base through general revenue. And our legislature declined to do that. Secondly, is to have the users pay the court a fee. Third,
who are the users?
I'll address that in a moment.
Okay.
And I'm happy to hit that head on. Third is to have users pay a vendor. In other words, to have the courts hire a private party as a vendor to provide this service, and then the vendor gets to fleece them for whatever they can. And fourth is to recoup those costs by selling something to the users when they use it. And that's the basic principle of how PACER works. PACER is the information management system used in the federal courts. That's our access to e-filing in federal courts. And to pay for that, users pay to view documents when they go into a case. And those fees that are generated by looking at documents is what pays for PACER. And a couple of states have looked at that same model. We have decided to go with model number two, which is to have users pay the fee. So the chief says, how about if we have different users pay for it? Instead of the clients paying for it, let's have the lawyers pay for it.
And it is billed to the client as a cost, right?
Either way.
I think that's up to the law firm, isn't it, how
and
they handle that?
We know how this works because we have been in the business of practicing law since before any of us were born. We could have the user pay that fee at the moment of filing, and it could be passed on to the client in the bill, right? Or we could have that lawyer pay a fee every year when they pay their dues, and the lawyers can raise their rates to recover that fee from their clients the way they do all kinds of overhead.
Yeah, but this is different. It goes to the loser. It's billed to the loser.
So let's talk about that. all the things that are recoverable under the cost statute can be billed to the loser,
right,
which would include not only the filing fee, but also photocopies and postage. And in the course of a case that a person files electronically, they save large amounts of postage and photocopy mm-hmm. costs. In fact, our belief is that if you pay $20 to electronically file, you're likely to save at least $20. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't promise you'd save $40, so there may be some costs passed along there. But in considering how much of a burden that is on the losing party, consider also the fact that in our courts, 80% or more of cases are settled. Are settled.
Right.
The parties don't necessarily pay those costs. Or if they do, they're lumped in with other costs, and maybe that burden doesn't pass along directly. In the other cases, which are decided by default judgment, those costs are passed along. But I think you could ask practitioners how often those individual costs become subject of collection. People agree to a payment plan if the default judgment ever catches up with them and maybe pay 20% or 30% or 10% of the
is
judgment.
Is that all figured out in your revenue, in Gene Busquets' revenue of February 18, 2016?
Well, when you say it's it all figured out, we don't know who will ultimately pay it, but we do know the people who sign on, they'll pay the $20 per party per case, and that will cover our costs.
But when you do an estimate of revenue, you do an estimate of how many won't pay.
Actually, we're not going to be responsible for ultimately collecting it from the client. We collect from the filer, whoever that is, the lawyer or a self-represented litigant. The moment they file, they pay. And what we have done is we've estimated the number of cases that we believe will be filed, civil, family, small claims, and the number of users in those cases who we should charge. So we're not government agencies, not self-represented litigants, not indigent people,
We don't have those figures, Judge Sankovitz.
You do not have a spreadsheet breakdown of every
right.
single detail.
That's right. So we can't evaluate in 6 months whether these figures are good or bad or have to be redone.
That's something we'd be happy to promise you updates on, and I'll tell you that there is some art.
What about an estimate now? Spreadsheet now.
What we have in the table that we provided to you in that memo that we filed last Thursday is a table that shows you what we believe the revenues will be and what
right.
we believe the costs will be.
Right.
Those
but
revenues.
It doesn't show it per kind of case.
No, it does not show it per civil kind of case, family, or small claim.
Right.
That's true.
And doesn't show your estimates of the number of cases and the number of self-represented. And I don't see how you figured in limited representation or pro bono representation.
Pro bono representation, if the person's indigent, they're not going to pay the filing fee. If it's a pro bono representation that may not be indigent, where the lawyer decides to take the case without charging the client, and the person's not indigent, that person will pay a filing fee.
What about limited representation?
Limited representation, they will pay the fee.
The client.
The lawyer, if the lawyer files the case, the lawyer will pay the fee, and then it's a question of whether the lawyer will pass it along. I'm sure lawyers will tell you that as we move into the future now, there are fewer and fewer clients that are going to be billed for those individual costs. A lot of lawyers have said, I'm just going to charge an hourly fee. That's going to cover my overhead. It's going to cover all these costs because I don't want to argue with a client over 20 cents for a photocopy or $5 to have a bike messenger take it to the courthouse rather than mail it out the day before.
So can you provide that spreadsheet?
Yeah, I believe we can provide that spreadsheet, yes.
Okay. Good.
Here's an important thing for you to understand. In deciding how much revenue can generate in 4 years, we have to make a prediction.
That's right.
About how many cases are going to be filed. And one thing we have to take account of, and we did take account of, is the fact that filings are decreasing.
That's right.
The number of civil and family and small claims cases has been going down, and we've predicted that it will continue to fall at the same rate as it is currently falling. And so over the course of time, we will not have as many cases filed or as many fees as we might today. And we have taken that into consideration.
We won't have, though, the costs of the startup with the purchase of scanners and a lot of other equipment that are going to be covered by these fees later on either, correct?
We'll have to replace all that equipment sooner or later, right? So we have averaged those costs over the four-year life cycle of all that equipment.
Well,
in fact, some of the costs that we anticipate incurring will be to replace equipment we currently have that will need replacement, particularly because it's going to get increased use. For example, right now we have bulk scanners that we use to help people scan their documents in. Those are going to have to be replaced, and we've estimated that cost.
Right. I see that the numbers on replacement costs for hard equipment, though, has gone up, peaked, and then gone down. So you don't anticipate it's going to be at the peak level on a consistent basis.
True.
Now, you've got support and implementation at $742,000 across the board, including an ongoing cost.
Yes. Can I explain that for you?
Is that forever?
Is that what?
Forever?
It's at least for the foreseeable future. Right. That $742,000 consists mainly of what we call 8 analysts. Those analysts are the people who work at CCAP to help us deal with our customers and support them. Understand right now that we serve about 3,000 customers at CCAP, but that's only because there's about 1,000 firms that are filing, and then we have the people who work in the court system themselves. If we make filing mandatory, we're going to have 12,000 lawyers in the state who might use this system and their support staff. We could have as many as 30,000 users. And so our idea is to try to bulk up our staff of people who can help people out as they use the system, and that will continue as long as the system is running.
The February 18 has support and implementation costs, which is $742,000 ongoing, include 8 contract business process analysts. Now, let me tell you what bothered me. I went back and looked at what we put in our budget asking the legislature to fund us. And we asked for roughly $2.2 million for the 2 years. And then it was estimated it would cost $7 per case, not every party, but $7 per case to continue e-filing for all case types, right?
I did not familiarize myself with that last proposal.
Well, that's what it was. So now I look at this electronic filing, and it shows in 1 year of the biennium $2 million revenue projections, and then a 2.5, and then 2.22. So you got 3 years. That was 2.46, about $7 to $8 million in revenue. Well, we only asked the legislature for $2 million and then the $7 filing fee, which we can impose. So why is the cost so high now when we only asked for the legislature for $2 million, and we've already bought a lot of scanners, according to CCAP, and the counties have been putting in their own money to buy scanners. Dane County, for example, put in $30,000, and we got reports from all the districts, and several have put in money. So how come you got now $8 million in 3 years for only some filings when we asked for all case filings and we needed only $2.2 million?
Isn't it awful being somebody who was born and raised in Wisconsin? We just sold ourselves short the last time around.
Well, you know,
we didn't look carefully enough at what we needed, and now we have.
I don't think that's quite fair to CCAP. They worked long and hard for that budget proposal. And as you know, in cross-examination, after you set the person up, then you say, which time were you wrong, then or now, right?
Then.
Pardon me?
Then.
Then, right. And then Gene Bisquette will tell us why.
You can look at the minutes of our CCAP steering committee. We've been discussing this for 2 years now. We really tried to get it done at a number we thought the legislature would agree with. It was a bare-bones proposal, and it turns out it's insufficient. We've learned a lot more about electronic filing, given the time we've had since then, to understand just what we're going to need to do. I'll tell you one reason why this is so expensive is because we're accommodating people who can't afford lawyers. People who can't afford lawyers are going to give us things in writing. We have this large expense for bulk scanning because we're going to still get so much paper. And we're accommodating people who can't electronically file. And that's going to make this expensive. And we did not estimate that expense when we made the first proposal, among other expenses.
Now, I see that Judge Sankovic's red light is on, but a number of members on the court haven't asked any questions. Justice Prosser, did you have something you wanted to ask?
Yes, I
would.
Please. Justice Abrahamson has talked about billable cost to the user. Is that in the rule itself? Is
there no, there's a statute, 758.19 sub 4M, which gives the authority to the director to set the fee. And that'll be the statutory authority for the director to set the $20 fee.
No, but the billable cost is in the petition.
Oh, you mean to collect this as a cost at the end of the case. Yes, that's sub...
7C. 1...
Yeah, 801.18 sub 7 sub C.
Okay, actually, your answer was my next question. why isn't the $20 in the rule?
Two reasons. One is we already have a statute which gives the director the authority to set the fee, so we didn't need to make any changes to give the director that authority. Secondly, if you give the legislature the ability to control the statute and change the fee, then we have another fee that the legislature can hijack. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, what's the process by which the director sets the fee?
The director listens to CCAP and sets the fee. Now, what we're proposing in addition to the way we've always set the fee before is to have an advisory board. You've seen in the materials we've submitted a proposal to have an advisory board based or built on and composed of the constituents of the system so that they can recommend to the director what kind of improvements are needed, what kind aren't, whether the fee should be raised or lowered or stayed the same.
So your answer did not include reference to the Supreme Court.
I think the Supreme Court has a good deal of influence, if not authority, over what the director ultimately does. But as a matter of finding the written authority in the law for where that fee is set, the legislature and the court have approved giving that authority to the director in 758.19 sub 4M.
Now, what I think I did read proposed statute or rule is that there are times when there's an existing case, then this whole system kicks in. And if that existing case stays on, there's going to be that $20 assessment on the existing case. Is that right?
If we can convert it, yes.
If we
convert the case to electronic filing, yes.
Okay. Well, I have a really tough question, but because I'm a gentleman, I'm not going to ask it.
Okay, you can ask me afterwards. Thank you.
Are there other questions from other justices who haven't had a chance to ask a question of Judge Sankovic?
Yes, I have several. Let me start out by indicating when this was previously before us on March 15th, 2015, I, along with one other person, was in favor of it. I think you folks have done a wonderful job because I have a sense that the court is now turning. I know you were provided a transcript of that March 15th, 2015 hearing. Say that at the forefront. Secondly, let me say at the forefront, as you started, you brought your experience and your background now and in the past in working in the Milwaukee County Circuit Courts and then specifically now with e-filing. Part of my background and the past, I remember what judges now look back upon and call the Stevens Point Conference. That was a pivotal conference, and you were there.
The birth of PPAC. Actually, I was not a judge at that time.
Oh,
I was still a lawyer, but
okay.
Was familiar with what went on.
You just have been around so long, I thought you were.
Thank you.
Right before that conference, I was on the legislative committee, and I remember then Chief Justice Heffernan wanted to bring and increase some court costs. And the legislative committee said, no, we can't be funding the court system with all of these assessments and costs. And for many, many years on this court, our attitude, not only of the court, but of the system, has been keep these costs down. They are just another form of taxation, right? and you put them on the users, we've got to make sure that they are, if they're going to be put on the users or we're going to fund it, if it's not going to come out of the general fund, we've got to do something, in my mind, to make sure it's not on what I call the backs of the people who can least afford it. And I know you share that concern.
I do.
Because I've seen you work in so many ways, and access to justice, and quite frankly, and I'll speak just to you, hold you in the highest of regard for that. I am concerned about this proposal and how it affects, again, the people who can least afford it. I want to focus on small claims court, and I also want to focus on why you decided not to go the PACER route. Perhaps you can give me more information regarding that. Again, by way of background, I'm so proud of CCAP and have been for years. We have led the nation. People of this state should know we have led the nation in what CCAP has done. But there are, with like a lot of things, some collateral consequences. One of the collateral consequences that we've worked hard as a system, and people like you and others have worked hard to make sure that the privacy rights of folks are not infringed. They have made sure that our system of justice does not, in de facto, create injustice in individual people's lives because of an invasion of privacy. We've seen people come to this court and complain they can't get jobs because of the information on CCAP. They can't get dates.
Well, at least their mothers won't let them.
Their mothers won't let them.
Yes.
That's right. That's why they can't get dates, you know. Victims have complained that they have been re-victimized because of this. So we've tried to address that. Why isn't PACER a step towards addressing that? That is, making it a bit more tough to look at the web and just scan the names, and also at the same time fund the system, not necessarily on the backs of the people who can least afford it.
So let me answer those two concerns, and I view two concerns there. One is about the cost to people who can't afford it, and the second is this privacy issue.
It tied into PACER. I mean, that. Why
yes.
did you... That's right, with
right.
regard to PACER. Yes.
Okay, and I think our system answers both those questions better than PACER. On PACER, anybody can pay to get that information, and anybody in the public can view it. On our system, only the parties to the case can view it, and people who go down to the courthouse and view it through a kiosk the same way they could if they asked for the file off the shelf. Our answer to privacy concerns has always been, if we have the file buried deeply enough in the clerk's office, people won't trouble themselves to go down to the courthouse and find what is otherwise a public record. And if we need more protections like that, we can build them in, for example, redacting names or sealing certain records. All of those practices, all those Wisconsin traditions continue with the system that we are building. And if we were to go to a PACER system where you could simply pay, you could look at any document from the comfort of your home, or your robot could look at any document and create a website where all that information would be for sale.
I know,
the federal government
can create. I mean, I go on CCAP, you know, I check folks out just like everyone else checks folks out. And, you know, so it's not all that confidential. I can go right now to my desk and pull up one of your kids' names.
But you can't pull up the document that has my kid's medical records in it in a personal injury
That's
case,
right.
can you?
You can't do that, but I can find out if you've been foreclosed upon. I can find out if there's a garnishment action. I can find out if you're convicted of OWI and speeding and default judgments. So, you know, enough.
That won't change under the new rule. But it won't get worse, which it would. I mean, if that's your view of how we should protect privacy, that would be worse under a PACER-funded system.
It isn't. I'm not sold on that as an idea. I simply explore it as an alternative funding. As I started out my comments, I'm very much in support of electronic filing, very much. The question is, who pays?
Okay, so let me answer that. And we looked at PACER. We know, though, we can't start that without having that family conversation about, do we want to make these documents available to anybody in the world who has access to the Internet? Then our next concern is, how about the people who can't afford to pay? Right now, they don't have to pay, and that doesn't change under the new system. Under the new system, a person can file a fee waiver, and if that fee waiver is granted, they don't pay the electronic fee just like they don't pay any of the other fees. Then we have this concern on the back end. This is Justice Abramson's concern. Well, of course, they don't have to pay on the front end, but if they lose, then these costs are taxed against them. And what I'd submit is that the cost that they will ultimately end up paying will be lower. They're going to have to pay the $20 that the other side paid as a filing fee, but they won't have to pay that other side's photocopy costs for getting the documents up to the courthouse multiple times, for the summons, for the complaint, for the scheduling conference data sheet, for the motion for default judgment, for the affidavit in support, for the affidavit of service. None of those photocopy costs. And they won't have to pay the postage to get them there either.
Okay.
Those are the kinds of costs that are typically recovered at the end of a case, but those costs either are replaced by the electronic filing fee or they're actually diminished because the electronic filing fee is lower than those costs taken together.
Two things then in response. I don't mean for this to be necessarily a debate, because, of course, given your skills, I would probably lose the debate. But I don't accept your premise that we would have to sacrifice the kind of privacy if we went to a PACER record, a PACER approach, because we could do PACER modified, right, and have the information that's now available except for charge. So I don't accept the premise.
So you'd erect a system where anybody can look at the documents, but we would say certain documents are off limits.
No, just like it is now, but you pay for it.
Yeah.
Pay for it.
That would be a much more complicated system to do. We're happy to do it if we can find funding for it. And we'd be happy to look at that. But for now, to get us started, let's have a user fee, and then we can migrate to a PACER system at a point when we're ready to take that on. I think one thing that might be useful for that, and just considering that, is look at the research we have about the states. We supplied some of that.
Yes.
Justice Abramson got some from the National Center. Look at how few states have gone with the PACER model. And I think it's because of the complexity of having this basically pay platform for people coming to the system and buying those documents that you have to create. And then, of course, ours would be even more expensive, because then we got to figure out this filtering system to filter out documents that we consider too sensitive.
Yeah, I understand there's impediments. If the feds can do it, Wisconsin can do it, is my response.
Yes, we could get an act of Congress to pay for Wisconsin to have electronic filing.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not asking for that. Again, and I'm not sure I agree with your premise that the cost of photocopies, which I think is, what, 50 cents a copy now?
I think law firm would charge about 20 cents. I don't know, Fran, what do they charge
right now? $1.25.
$1.25?
About 25 cents a copy.
At least it was when I was a circuit court judge. It was $1.25.
What? Tell me what it is.
A firm might charge 25 cents a copy now.
And the cost of postage would necessarily overtake the $20 fee or the $40 fee if you combine two 20s, you know, plaintiff and defendant.
But an indigent person isn't paying the 20. They're only, as cost, they might have to pay the other party's 20, because that party didn't get a fee waiver.
And I'm still not sure that the cost of photocopying that you present with the cost of postage overcomes a $20 fee. So I'm just not sure. I do know this, that small claims court is used primarily by, at least in Milwaukee, it appears substantially by large corporations, right?
Yes, the utilities, for example.
But WE Energies has turned up the heat on customers with unpaid bills, more than quadrupling the numbers of claims, this article says.
Typically, it's utilities, bill collectors, and landlords. Those are our most frequent flyers in small claims court.
The article also mentions the payday loan stores, but they're rather, I think, somewhat recent phenomena. So that's what causes me to be concerned. This approach has four targeted areas. One is small claims. And I'm just concerned about raising the cost on the people who are the subject of the largest category of plaintiffs. Because a lot of times people who can't pay those bills will be taxed, literally and figuratively, by paying an additional 20
$1 fee. We already have in small claims court, I think, $11.80 that goes directly to CCAP. Out of the justice information surcharge, there's $6 that goes to CCAP. When's enough enough? Isn't there a different way to do it?
Well, if the different way is to tax the bar and then consider what the effect of that is, I think that raises the barriers to people getting access to lawyers, because lawyers will pass that along like they do other overhead costs.
Chief, could I ask one question?
Yes, please do. I want the court to be aware, and I'm certainly watching, and I know there are a lot of people here. We have more than used up the time that I allocated for the first three presenters. So I want the court to have their questions answered, but to the extent we can keep our personal comments about our history until we have our open administrative conference, that may help us get through this session. So use the presenter to answer your questions.
These questions involve taxing the people of this state for use of the court system, access to justice. This is a huge issue, and I think it's important that we fully explore this, especially given in the past the opposition by this court to electronic filing.
Yeah, I agree with you, Justice Bradley. It's very important. Justice Ziegler, I believe, has a question.
I'll try to make it short. I understood that Marcia Mansfield would be perhaps in a position to address some of the questions that you raise, and look forward to her answers in that regard. I have one question for you, though, and it may not be appropriately directed to you. So if it isn't, please direct it to the next person, right, instead of answering something that's not what you're supposed to be answering. Having said that, my concern before was, sounds like a decent idea, but how do we fund it? So now you're coming back with an answer. And I was one of the people that wasn't so sure about e-filing, and I had a number of questions for indigent people and how we would get this done and how it would be funded, and now you've come back with some ideas. My only question regarding your idea at this point is it a substantive legal change that requires legislative action, or is it change that's appropriate for this court to do through rulemaking?
I think Judge Koshnick will talk about the text of the rule, so he might be in a better position to answer that. But I'll tell you that all of us were prepared to come and to tell you today that if we're talking just about funding this with authority that the director already has from the legislature, this is something that's appropriate for the court to approve.
Okay. I just wondered, given some of the comments that were made. Thank you.
Thank you.
If everyone else has asked,
just,
I have one
Not sure. Any other justice have a question?
I'll follow up. Okay, I have a question. Under the budget, the Supreme Court sets circuit court costs and defines them.
Okay.
And we haven't done that yet. And in July 1, we make a payment to the counties on a lot of money, $18 million over $18 million for each year in the two bienniums, as I understand it. If we added as a circuit court cost e-filing and took off 2.5% per year, we could collect from the counties $450,000. And that's not an unfunded mandate, because we're giving them funding for it from amount that was given to this court for distribution as this court sees fit to the counties. That would raise $450,000, and if you spread $450,000 over 72 counties, it isn't much. It's about $7,000 per county that they would kick in, and you could even refine that further because there's a scale for each of the counties based on population and number of circuit court judges. And if you did $20 for the attorneys times 20,000 attorneys, and there are more than that, but I just cut it down so it makes math easier, you get $400,000. So you can get $950,000 each year. Very simply. And they are the users. The circuit courts, the counties will benefit. I mean, that's just clear in all of the documentation. And the attorneys benefit. That's clear from all the documentation. And they are the real users. Have you considered that?
I can say honestly, we have not considered doing that. That's you have a view of the overall budget that I think gives you a better, puts you in a better position than we are to make a proposal like that and to judge it. Let me offer two observations about it, not meant to be answers to your questions, because I think you know a lot more about this than our team does. One observation is this: if we're going to count among the users of the system, the circuit court judges, then the court system has to pay for electronic filing, because we are users too, if we accept that as a premise.
No. The state as a whole benefits from e-filing.
I can't agree with you.
It's just an efficient, good way of doing it. But the immediate financial beneficiaries are the counties. They're going to save shelving space. They're going to save staff, et cetera. I mean, that's been all over it, and it's all over Judge Wirtz's matters. And the attorneys benefit because they can stand at home and file everything at 11:59. And we'll ask some questions about that from Judge Koshnick. But that's how I can get to $1 million a year, simply.
I couldn't agree with you more about saying that this is a benefit to the whole state, and the legislature should have paid for this as a capital investment.
I know, but that's gone. I lobbied for that. I saw every member of Joint Finance. I saw the leadership. I saw the governor. I tried hard. I was unsuccessful. I shouldn't say I was unsuccessful. The entire court was unsuccessful in getting that. Too bad. So sad. We move on.
And that's where I'll finish my comments. It is time for us to move on.
I think that Justice Bradley had one more follow-up question, and then we do need to move on to Judge Koshnick. Justice Bradley?
Thank you. I smiled when I heard you say that the fee would not be hijacked, because part of your experience and my experience and our court collective experience is that our fees have been hijacked, to use your phrase, in the past. I smiled because this sets up perhaps a barrier, but tell me more why you think it really sets up a barrier from what has happened in the past, is that we have been going along reluctantly with increasing some kind of a fee or assessment, thinking the money would go to the courts, and only having the money in the wisdom of the legislature being diverted to other purposes. Do you think this really protects it?
I think that the answer to that lies in the language of 758.19 sub 4M, and it gives the director the authority to charge it and to collect it, and it doesn't get diverted in the language of that statute.
So I guess the answer in part is, until the language of that statute is changed, if and when it is, the money is protected, you think?
Yes. Let me make this last comment, Chief Justice. I agree with Justice Abramson that it is time to move on. We have an opportunity right now with the CCAP staffing that we have available to us. We've just finished two immense projects, the dashboard, which you're all familiar with, and calendar management, which gives our clerks so much ability to maneuver our documents and to manage our calendars and to find out what's going on before us and make our services more efficient for the people who use them. And now we have some capacity to do e-filing. But if we put this off for a year or we put this off for 2 years so we can study another option, we're going to lose that opportunity. And we're going to be, those people are going to be back trying to plug all the holes that will have developed in this system that Judge Wirtz described, where we have 1 foot in the paperless world and 1 foot in the electronic world, or 1 foot in the paper world. So we really would ask you, if these issues are as straightforward as we hope they should appear to you, that you make your decision this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation and for all your work on this. Judge Koshnick?
Good morning, Justices. My prepared remarks are relatively brief. I'd like to pick up where I left off. last year and basically discussed the changes in the amended petition as it relates to what we had in the original petition.
Good idea.
There are really four, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about any aspect of the petition in other areas. Basically, there are four changes, and these are discussed in Judge Wirtz's letter to the court dated December 22nd of 2015 at pages 2 and 3. The first two changes are significant. The first is that we're going to apply the new rule. We're proposing that the new rule would cover both voluntary and mandatory e-filing for all case types beginning July 1st of 2016. Under the old petition, the first petition, we had 801.17, which is a voluntary e-filing rule, would continue in existence and enforcement, and the new 801.18 was mandatory, and they were going to sort of coexist during the phase-in period, with 801.17 eventually dropping off when everything was mandatory, and 801.18 would become the new rule at that point. But we're no longer asking for two different rules. We're asking that 801.17, currently in effect, currently known as voluntary e-filing, would be repealed, effective June 30th of this year, and then on July 1st of this year, 801.18 would take effect, and it would apply to both voluntary e-filing cases and mandatory e-filing cases.
But it only applies to certain types of cases for mandatory.
In the beginning, yes, that's true. In the rollout, we're going to roll out four cases mandatory statewide, four case types: family, paternity, small claims, and civil.
You know what I don't get from the petition? The exact timeline. You got a time for a pilot program, and then you got a rollout, and I don't get the time frames.
Right. Well, the time frames are not in the rule. They are the other materials we've submitted. We need some flexibility. Things may go smoother than we expect. Then they can move along more quickly. There may be some unforeseen blips or fine-tuning that needs to be done, and things may be a little bit slower than we expect. But the timeline right now is to roll out July 1st of this year the mandatory e-filing rule, 801.18, to go county by county or in groups of counties to make e-filing mandatory in those four case types that I've discussed, civil, family, paternity, and small claims, and to have all counties in the state mandatory e-filing in those four case types by December 31st of 2017. It's about a year and a half to get everybody statewide mandatory on those four case types. And then by the end of 2019, all case types mandatory e-filing in all counties. And this has really been done to accommodate the funding issue. If we had the $2.1 million, which we don't, we were talking about rolling out all case types county by county. But to facilitate the funding issue, we rewrote the rule to use these four case types first. They'll generate the revenue we need to get started. I think it's important to say you can always revisit the funding later. What we would encourage you to do is adopt the rule now, basically allow the director to set the fee at $20, and we can start on this tomorrow and have it become effective July 1st and get rolling. And if we need to revisit funding or by a PACER-type system or some other fee structure in the future, nothing prevents you from doing that. This allows us to start.
Where does it say the director is only allowed $20 per filing?
Right. He has discretion to set the fee.
Yeah, where?
That's the statute.
Yes, but where does it say it's going to be $20?
That's not in the rule.
That's right.
So that's in the materials we submitted. That's what's going to be initially, we believe, and we can modify that later if we need to.
Well, who's we?
The Director of State Courts, the State Supreme Court.
Well, there's nothing in here about the court, nothing here reporting back to the court about how things are going and whether the projections, and they're going to, Jean said she'd submit a spreadsheet, and whether the spreadsheet is being is accurately reflecting what's happening or isn't. All of this is in ever land.
Well, I'd like to stay with the changes to the petition, if I may. We've discussed funding pretty extensively. I realize those are issues. There's a lot of unknowns, but we've done the best we can to quantify how much we need to get going now. Mm-hmm. At $20 per party in these four case types, we can fund a rollout and get on board with e-filing statewide. And we think it'll be an orderly rollout. The second thing that we did in the amended petition is remove the language that assumes the rollout will be county by county in all case types, like I've already suggested. Changes 3 and 4 are relatively minor, but I want to mention this so the record is complete. We had to update references to the new rules that you recently approved on redaction confidentiality and ceilings. That's been an update in the language to coordinate with that. And fourth, we have amended provisions on electronic notarization. Now, this is a change, not really going to be a change. It was a change in the original petition. We were trying to have an electronic method for notarization. Turns out right now that's unworkable, it's complicated. Where law firms, you know, have had the chance to do it, they haven't. They basically had the notary sign the document, put the seal on it, and then scan it and send it to us. So we've taken out new methods of electronic notarization because it's too complicated right now. So really we're not changing anything there except removing a change from the original petition, if that makes any sense. So those are the highlights of the changes. I did want to address Justice Ziegler's question about substantive law changes. Now, the intention really is not to change any substantive law or any law in any substantive way. I think the best way to think about it is we're trying to change what's done on paper now to be done in electronic form. And we've been very careful not to put anything in the rule that would change or affect the substantive rights of any party. It's really a process change in how we compile, transmit, and store information or data in the court system.
What about the provision that says you can file up until 11:59 at night and it will be treated as if it were filed during business hours, right? Do you know
yes.
What provision I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
And then it has a last sentence, but not if the law provides otherwise, and I didn't understand that.
I'm not aware of any law that would have a different provision, but in the sense that maybe a statute is created in the future that sets a time of day something must happen, we don't want to be changing those statutes. So the default right now for filing, you could say, is when the courthouse closes, typically 4:30. The default under the rule would come 11:59 p.m.
And that's basically what the federal courts use, isn't
that's
it?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the problem is that the lawyer is at great disadvantage. You put this provision in about 11:59, and then you have, except if it's otherwise provided by law, but you have no commentary. Did you find any other exceptions? I mean, there must be rules about the courthouse being closed on holidays, on after hours, and that when filings have to be due. And it seems to me you need something in here that calls lawyers' attention to that, or that they're gone.
We're trying to avoid unintended consequences. One comes to mind. In a Chapter 51 mental proceeding, mm-hmm. The petition needs to be filed within 72 hours of detention of the subject.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think that would remain the same. That'd be an example. So this would not give the county or petitioning party in a Chapter 51 commitment an additional number of hours to file those documents. 72 hours is 72 hours for filing those documents. So I think that's an exception that this provision may take into consideration and accommodate. We don't want to change the substantive rules. That could substantively affect the rights of a mental commitment subject, because he or she could be detained longer without the petition being filed. So we would not be extending that timeline in that case. But if the current rules provide for filing by the end of the day, which is sort of by default, they give a deadline as the day, typically that's when the courthouse closes, 4:30 p.m., that would now be 11:59 p.m. We don't need a person in the clerk of court's office to receive the papers. The CCAP system can receive the filing.
So are we amending that statute? It says the papers to be filed before closing time.
I don't know that there is a statute that says that. There's deadlines.
Right.
There are a number of days that things need to be done. This needs to be filed within 60 days. By default, the 60th day ends at 4:30 p.m. when the courthouse closes. I'm not aware of a statute that fixes that time. But it's a practical matter.
Why do you say by default?
Because by default, you know, once the courthouse is closed, you can't file something. So I think historically it's been 4:30 p.m. on the last day that you could file something. We're now extending that to 11.
What did we do in the fax rules? Because faxes can be done 24 hours a day.
Treat them the same, 11:59 p.m. for fax filings.
In this rule?
Yes.
But what about previous to this proposed rule? What about faxes?
I think that was probably handled on a county-by-county basis. I think that 4:30 was probably the deadline for being filed that day. I don't know. But this will make it clear that fax rules are the same as e-filing, 11:59 p.m.
No, but we don't know what the facts were. I'll check that. Thank you.
I mean, so if you're a paper filer here, that gives you that advantage that you can file by 11:59 p.m. just like the other side could if they were an e-filer. That's the extent of my prepared comments. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Justice Prosser.
In 3A1, I believe that licensed Wisconsin attorneys are supposed to register. What does that term mean?
Other than those attorneys who represent themselves?
Yep.
Yeah. Licensed Wisconsin attorneys. I mean, does Gableman have to register?
I'm sure Judge Koshnick would give me a pass.
Right.
They pick
okay.
another member of the bench, David.
I don't know. I think it's all attorneys for licensed in Wisconsin.
Koshnick, this is a double-barreled thing. First, all the lawyers register. That gives them the approval, and that's ready and will deal with and govern themselves by the e-filing. But then you have to pay the fee for each particular case anyway. But that's the double thing. And that's from the federal court uses the same procedure. Isn't that right, Judge Koshnick?
Yes, the lawyers have to register first, and then for each case, they need to pay a $20 fee.
And Judge Harrington objected to that. Why do you double register?
It's sort of a fundamental question. I mean, do the members of the court have to register? That's one thing. But if you're a member of the Wisconsin Bar and you're living in California, it seems to me you also have to register.
Right. I may need to get back to you on that in our final comments. I need to discuss that with the other two judges. I think we made a provision for that, but I can't put my finger on it right now. So if I can get back to you in a few minutes on that, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. I have a second question. It has to do with the definition of user. Mm-hmm. A user means an individual who has registered to use the electronic filing system under sub 3. It's not law firms.
It's not what?
It's not law firms.
No.
Right.
So part of this rule or statute has been sold to me, I think, on the basis that, not every single attorney is going to have to understand this stuff. You're going to turn it over to the staff at the party's law firm. And it seems to me there are sole practitioners and very smaller law firms, and it seems to me the rule clearly states, let's see if I can find this. Somewhere here. Here it is. Format and contents of filing. Users are responsible for keeping up with these requirements and providing the necessary equipment, software, communications, technology, and staff training. In my office, my staff trains me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't train my staff. That would be chaos.
Well, think of it this way. Right now, the vast majority of law firms use computers to print up their pleadings. And the difference with the new rule is instead of printing it out and driving it down to the courthouse and mailing it, they'll hit the send button on the computer and e-file it through the electronic filing system. So we're really just requiring lawyers and their law firms and offices to have computers capable of producing PDF documents and Word documents. As the, and be familiar with the system and the rules of the system. We have to have rules of the system that all of us are going to operate under. We don't expect it to be very complicated. CCAP is going to have support staff to answer questions about that. We're doing training in every county on site and on the internet through the website before we roll it out. So we understand that training being provided is critical to a smooth rollout.
understand that, but there is turnover. Staff leave, staff pass away. There are all kinds of things. It seems to me that you are putting the responsibility of training on the individual attorney.
Well, I think that training requirement is there now under our current system. If anything, this will make it less complicated because it will be more uniform. There's always a training requirement. The lawyers are always responsible for what their staff does on their cases as it relates to the, you know, cases that they file. That's not going to change. It'll be a different type of training, but it's still going to be lawyers supervising to be responsible for what their staff does in their cases.
Okay. The third question I have, the date in which individual counties that aren't fully involved in this now, the date that individual counties come are scheduled to come in is the responsibility of the director of state courts?
Yes.
And that schedule will be online?
Yes, it'll be online. There'll be the local bar will be notified. There's going to be a lot. And we're going to be on the ground doing the training before the rule takes effect. So it's going to be really hard for someone who practices law to not be aware of the new rule taking effect in their county. We're going to notify them in as many ways as we can think of.
But let's say, now I'm from out of Gamey County, and we border Winnebago and Brown and Wapaka and Calumet. I don't suspect that those counties are all going to come on at the same time. But people in Appleton probably practice in all of those counties. And vice versa. There are people in Wapaka who practice in Outagamie County. How does that work?
Well, first of all, if the rule is approved by the court, we're going to have a lot of outreach to the legal community. I think the Wisconsin Lawyer magazine or website is planning an article if the rule passes in June. Right now, in 41 counties, they're e-filing capable for these four case types. So I think most lawyers are aware of the existence of e-filing. It's going to go from voluntary to mandatory, as I indicated, county by county, once the rollout begins. But it, like checking local rules before you go into an unfamiliar county, it's going to be something that the lawyer is going to have to become familiar with. And we're going to have it on the website, other public outreach methods, state bar, journal, things of that nature.
I forgot Shawnee County.
And I suppose if they try to file something on paper, they'll be told when they get there. If they haven't heard about it before, then they'll be told this needs to be filed electronically.
Well, it just seems, with all due respect, kind of having this come out in some sort of orderly manner to affect different counties is just not reality because people practice in multiple different counties.
Well, we are going to have a transition period, which is where it gets difficult. And because of if money was not a problem, we could roll it out statewide in all counties and all case types on the same day. But in order to generate the funds that we need to operate the system, we need to roll it out in these four case types, county by county. So as a practical matter, I think the consensus the committee has reached, unless there's some other funding source available, is we do it this way or we don't do it.
Well, there are other funds available.
Right. If there was other money available, we could do it some other way. But given the limitations that we have, not getting money from the legislature, we think a change to a patient-type system involves a lot of issues beyond the scope of just e-filing, all sorts of privacy-related issues, for example, that to implement e-filing within those parameters, restrictions that we have, this is the best way to do it. We're going to do the best that we can to make it an orderly rollout, but there is no other way to really do it at this point, given the funding realities.
You speak of orderly rollout, and lawyers have spoken to me about the need to have uniformity, otherwise they perceive this as chaos. We're not going to have uniformity in the rollout. What can be done to minimize
they perceive as potential chaos.
Well, I think it's important to remember we have the unanimous support of the State Bar Board of Governors. The letter from Legal Action had some concerns that we actually think are good ideas. So I think now that we've agreed to those modifications, they can be fairly characterized as being in support. I haven't received any significant type of resistance or objection from anybody. We've done a lot of public outreach. There's a few letters here and there about that, but I think by and large the legal community is ready for this to happen. The practitioners and the judges in the federal system embrace it fully and told us they would never go back. And so yes, in a perfect world with more money, you could do it more efficiently.
Yeah, electronic filing is in the federal system. It should be here completely in the state system. And so what I hear you saying is if and when we get these screams and cries from the state, from members of the bar, because, you know, if there's no uniformity in cases, there's no uniformity in counties, what are we are to do? Our response is contact the state bar because they unanimously supported it. Is that what our response?
Well, I think the response
I'm for that, if that's the...
Well, basically, yes. I mean, this has been pending now for over a year. We were here last year. I think there's been everything on... Almost everything is on the website. If you go to your website and look under the rules, the objections are there, the concerns are there, the petition language is there, both the original and the amended. Judge Sankovic went to the Board of Governors of the State Bar, and they had a copy of the amended petition ahead of time. So, I don't really see any significant resistance or concerns about that. I think most people who are stakeholders, if you will, are aware that there may be some bumps in the road, but we need to simply move ahead and deal with those as they arise. And CCAP is a premier agency, as you have noted before, and I'm fully confident that they're willing and able to go ahead with this and to do so successfully. They're the ones that are taking on the responsibility of the smooth rollout. They have basically come up with the plan, and I'm trusting them that they're able to do what they say they can do.
I'm not worried so much about CCAP because they are stellar, as you indicated. I'm worried about the two firm law office in La Crosse, Wisconsin, where you previously practiced, that also practices in Trempealeau County and maybe over in Vernon County, and that's what I'm talking about.
I think they're going to love it. If you have to drive from Viroqua to Prairie du Chien to file something now, you're going to be able to push the button on your computer and electronically file it. It really simplifies a lot of things, and it's going to save money, I think, in most cases for clients and lawyers.
Okay, unless the court has a pressing question, we have a number of other people that have come to give us information today, and I really appreciate your presentation. We also have two other rule petitions that are on, so thank you very much, Judge Koshnick.
Judge Koshnick, I do have a pressing question. Number one, the bar supports this as long as it's not an assessment against the lawyers. Two, the county association supports this as long as it's not an assessment against the county. Everyone is in favor of this as long as the other guy pays. And the other guy is a guy who's not represented. That is the litigant. Whether he's represented by counsel or not, he's not represented in the people you talk to and in the commentary. Now, Judge Wirtz has a final page 6 on his statement to the court, which is in our tab 30 for the court system. And page 6 says, electronic filing fee. This is a draft by the Wisconsin Director of State Courts, and it says basic fee $20 charged per lawyer or law firm. It's really charged to the client. The fee will be applied in the four. And this adds forfeiture cases. And I'm not sure that we got information on forfeiture cases. It'll be waived for indigents and for state, county, and municipal agencies. Now, the last line says, this is the waiver, this is the electronic filing fee. This policy about filing fees will be posted on the e-filing website and with the circuit court fee schedule. It will be reviewed periodically in consultation with the State Bar of Wisconsin. doesn't say it's going to be reviewed with the Supreme Court. Why is it reviewed in consultation with the State Bar of Wisconsin? And we've got issues of antitrust to the extent that it looks like this court is being governed by the State Bar of Wisconsin.
Well, we see the State Bar of Wisconsin is representing lawyers and litigants throughout the state, and that's one of the voices. That's the voice that they have as it relates to these types of assessments.
It doesn't stand for the people who are not represented. And in small claims court, what's your estimate of non-represented people?
I don't have that, but non-represented people don't have to pay the fee.
Pardon me?
And pro se litigants do not need to pay the fee.
I know. I understand that. But we don't know what indigent or pro se, what indigent means for the waiver. And pro se, we've got a problem on pro bono and limited representation. Are they pro se?
We're going, well, under the legal action proposal, we're going to use the same definition of agency that we currently have in the statute. I think it's at 814. We're going to amend that to include e-filing waivers. So if you can get a waiver for other court costs and fees, you can get a waiver for this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much,
okay.
Judge Koshnick.
Thank you.
Carla Robinson.
Good morning, Justices. I'm Carla Robinson, Clerk of Circuit Court for Jefferson County, and I'm a member of the Executive Committee for the Wisconsin Clerks of Circuit Court Association. I am pleased to represent the clerks here today. There are now 51 counties in Wisconsin that allow voluntary e-filing. 23 counties are completely paperless, meaning that the clerks scan everything that comes through the door, through the mail, in any other shape or form.
Now, paperless,
to paperless.
I'm sorry, paperless does not mean electronic filing.
It means we keep it in electronic format. We no longer make
it. But it's not e-filed.
Correct.
Okay.
Some of it's e-filed. Some of it's scanned to paperless.
Right. And most of it is scanned, not e-filed.
Correct.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify what we're talking about.
Thank you. The 23 counties that are paperless, because they scan everything to paperless, would be ready for the rollout of mandatory e-filing. The other counties that have voluntary e-filing in effect would be able to accept filings, e-filings from those other attorneys that maybe practice in mandatory e-filing counties and non-mandatory e-filing counties. There's 51 counties that are ready to accept those filings, whether it's mandated or not. In Jefferson County, we are an e-filing county. We have had 414 e-filed cases since October of 2014. In January of 2015, we went all out paperless. We now scan everything to make those electronic files. And we convert older files as they come up on the court's calendar. E-filing and electronic files save resources for the courts. We don't have to purchase file folders, labels. We don't have to spend money on paper, toner, or envelopes or postage for e-filed parties. It just goes out electronically. We were out of storage space for archives. Because we have now gone paperless, we are gaining space back, and we don't have to worry about that storage issue. Large counties that pay for document storage will be able to recoup those costs because they won't have to continue to add to their storage fees.
You know, I'm just trying to think back, and hearing you talk reminds me that we, in Washington County, we did one of the very first e-filing pilot programs, and that was... Gosh, I'm trying to think. Was that 15 years ago? It had to have been quite some time ago because it was when I was a trial court judge. And so it had to be 99, 97, quite a while ago. So I'm just sort of backing up and listening to some of my colleagues and listening to the bench and listening to the questions. This isn't something that's just being sprung on people or the judiciary. This has been a work in progress for going on maybe almost 20 years, not quite, but 15-ish, working out the glitches along the way with test projects and different ways of trying things, resistance, lack of resistance. We got to the point the last time you were here, how many months ago was that? Maybe you weren't here. Maybe Teresa Russell was
Teresa
here
was
instead.
Here.
But and it came down to, sounds great, need to find a way to fund it. So I understood that we were here today to really sort of narrow the field to how are we going to fund it. Everyone, I thought, it, believe that e-filing is really here. Otherwise, for 15 or more years, we wouldn't be working on this. It would have received the kibosh years ago, right? So, you know, the savings, the space, the all those things, I'm not trying to cut you short, but I am trying to say, I thought today's hearing was primarily about the revisions in this proposal and addressing funding for it. So what do you think of those things?
I'm not here to speak to the funding issue, just the efficiencies that the court gets from paperless and e-filing cases.
Okay.
So if you don't need more information, that's fine from me. But that is my piece, is just to tell you that the courts really reap the benefit of that e-filing.
I'm not trying to cut you short. It's really nice to see you. It's great to have you here today. I'm just saying a lot of speakers have taken considerably more time, and I know the Chief Justice is trying to keep us on time and actually get to a vote today so we can either move this forward or not. So I'm just trying to figure out if people truly have questions about the efficiencies, because those aren't new concepts, given the fact that we've been rolling down this road for, gosh, going on the second decade, I think.
Absolutely. It has morphed more so in the last 5 years, but it has been in place for quite some time.
Right.
I guess taking from Justice Ziegler's comments, if you don't have comments about court efficiency and you'd rather focus on the funding, I'm happy to wrap up my piece of this. But if you have questions for me, I'd also be
happy to answer. You're involved in funding, too.
Remember, I tried to save you.
Well, I am. The back side, the attorney side, the filing party side of it.
Sure.
That you are working on today.
You said you're saving costs.
Yes.
All right. Approximately, what is your estimate of the costs you're saving in Jefferson County? In space, in your staff time?
The first, as we're rolling this out, we're saving, but we're also having to spend.
Pardon
so
me?
The first year or so, we're saving on some staff time and paper and documents.
How much? You've been at it 2 years, if I got your figures right, 1.5 years.
2 years in file folders alone is about $5,000 in my county. Staff time is reallocated to scanning,
sure.
So it's not changed, it's reallocated.
Right.
Space, the county didn't have to add on to the building, so that's the savings. Not everything is quantifiable, but it is a savings as we move forward and how
mm-hmm.
we do business.
Mm-hmm.
A cost is I did purchase additional desktop scanners that weren't funded by CCAP because it helped us move forward much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent this year about $2,400 to accommodate that.
Mm-hmm.
Another cost that the county will incur is additional wiring to upgrade our wireless internet in the courthouse so that attorneys who now will be using computers in the courtrooms have that ability to access their data.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a one-time cost in order to get that upgraded. So there are costs associated at the county level that are offset by some of the other savings.
Has the county put in any money to buy scanners?
I was able to fund that out of my existing budget by reallocating some other things within the budget.
Okay, so you've been funding some scanners, so that takes off the need for CCAP to fund those scanners.
Correct. The CCAP did provide us some. They have
an
allocation
plan,
and I wanted more.
And then you needed more, so that does reduce the ultimate costs across the board,
true.
The scanners.
Mm-hmm.
What about your... estimates of how much revenue you're going to collect or will be collected from e-filing in Jefferson County for a small claims court. What percent of small claims court are self-represented?
In our county, most of the respondents in small claims actions are non-represented.
Okay.
Whether that's due to indigency or choice, I don't know that for you.
Okay, but then you don't collect that $20 from them.
Correct.
Okay. So how many small claims cases do you have per year? I asked these questions of Carlo Escato, and I think if you read the internet, you saw his responses, and he wasn't able to do that in the county. That is, figure out how many small claims cases there were, how many self-represented, therefore you'd get a total of what the revenue would be. Have you been able to do that?
I have not done that analysis. I know that we have approximately 1,800 small claims cases per year.
Okay, and you'd say of the 1,800, 80%, 75%?
Probably 75% of the respondents are self.
Are self-represented,
yes.
That's three-fourths, okay.
But I would say that that doesn't mean that they wouldn't opt into the system. You don't have to be an attorney to opt into the case.
All right, and so that would be your collection on that. What about on, originally when this started out in Washington County, the kids' support fees related to electronic filing were paid for by the federal government. But the feds no longer pay that, as I understand it.
The state child support agency, is my understanding, picked that up. So the child support agency is currently paying that $5, that's the current e-filing fee, on each case that they opt into or file.
And that is planned to go up now, right, from $5 to $20. Are they going to pick it up?
Well, the fee is going up, but as a government agency, they will no longer have to pay that going forward.
So that reduces your revenue?
It reduces CCAP's revenue. That's not a $5 fee that comes to me. That's a
cost that comes to CCAP, but that's reduced, right?
Right.
Okay. So that kid's support is gone for the most part because the feds don't pay it. The states are immune from paying it, right?
Correct.
So that's gone. All right. What about, have we done small claims, kids? What about civil cases? What number of civil cases you have per year in Jefferson County?
Our civil caseload is about approximately 400 cases a year.
Pardon me?
Approximately 400 cases total per year for civil.
Yeah, and that doesn't include the traffic. We're just talking about the civil.
Just
cases.
This, right, the true
okay.
Civil filing.
That's $400.
400 cases.
400 cases, I'm sorry.
Most of those cases have representation for the plaintiff and the respondent.
All right. So you would get at least a minimum of $40 per case.
Correct.
But could get much more, right?
Yes, that's in some revenue. Cases there are many, many attorneys.
So your revenue is about $16,000 on that, right? What other cases do we have?
Well, those are the case types that are covered by the mandatory e-filing, the small claims and the child support cases.
And what will the amounts we collected from small claims and civil do to help out next year in e-filing? Because they're supposed to be working towards supporting more e-filing.
What am I doing to support e-filing?
No, how would these funds be used in Jefferson County? I know they don't go to Jefferson County, but they're available.
Well, we have a request in for dual monitors because that's not something I want to fund out of my county budget because it helps when you are working with all electronic files to have two monitors. Mm-hmm. And I also have a request for an additional bulk scanner in Jefferson County. And that is a large expense that I'm not going to fund out of my budget either. So there's still equipment that can help us do our job better. And those are on our list of requests to CCAP.
And you're going to the county board for that?
I could, but I make my request to CCAP first to see if they will provide those.
Mm-hmm. So you're going back to CCAP for that?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I know you came to tell us a little bit about the clerk's perspective and not deal with the finances. The time that we allocated is far gone, and we're never going to even get through this first petition if we don't move along. But I don't want you to leave without you telling us how the clerks, in your view, as statewide servants of the people, feel about e-filing, because I know that's what you came to talk about.
We are all in favor of moving forward with the e-filing petition. Those of us that are scanning would like to see that burden lessened by having it come to us electronically, so that would be a great asset to have it come to us electronically. we just see advantages. I had one of my clerks working in small claims yesterday and asked them for some feedback for me coming here today. She had a stack of new small claims filing of about 25 new filings that she estimated would take her at least the full afternoon to process and get the return copies out. If those had been e-filings, she estimated a half an hour to process those. Mm-hmm. It's a huge time-saving benefit for the clerks to get e-filed documents in cases.
And the lawyers haven't been doing it voluntarily in large numbers, right?
No, they have not.
That's right, which is why we've had to go to mandatory, because it hasn't worked in Wisconsin.
It's not worth to leaving it to voluntary
to do that. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much for coming and giving us the clerk's perspective. It's very important to the court as we consider this petition.
And the Clerks Association has been uniformly and consistently in favor of electronic filing and filed in 2015 and 2016.
Yes. Thank you very much. Robert Drafts.
Good morning, Justices. I'm appearing for the Wisconsin Newspaper Association, the Milwaukee Journal, Sentinel, the Wisconsin State Journal, and Courthouse News Service. I know you're all familiar with the state's Newspaper Association and its two largest newspapers, but you may be less so with Courthouse News Service. CNS is a 24-year-old legal news service that reports exclusively on civil cases, from initial filing of a new complaint through appellate proceedings. For bigger courts, like the Milwaukee County Circuit Court, CNS staff visit the clerk's office every day to report on significant new filings, while smaller state courts are visited once or twice weekly. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Wisconsin State Journal, and other members of the WNA also rely on timely access to new filings in their coverage area for news reporting. I appear today on their behalf to urge this court to preserve the same day access as we move to electronic filing that the news media in this state have long enjoyed with paper filings. Today, in Wisconsin's largest circuit court, journalists can review and copy new civil complaints on the day they are filed prior
that's
to docketing.
Mr. Drebs, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that's not what the filings to us say. The filings to us say that today you can't view anything until it's been cleared on the clerk's office that it's not a confidential sealing of one sort or other.
Paper filings today in the Milwaukee County Circuit Court are available to the press on a daily basis.
But do you know the reference I'm making?
No, I don't.
Okay. I'll find it, and then we can talk about
it. Thank you.
All right.
CNS has learned from experience in other states that moving to electronic filing can result in significant delays in public access to newly filed complaints. Pleadings that were available at the courthouse on a daily, even an hourly basis, when filed on paper, were suddenly unavailable to the public for days while awaiting processing by the clerk's office. Acceptance. There has to be a process for acceptance, we understand that, but that shouldn't delay press access to new material. There are methods to work that out. They've been worked out in other states. This court has the opportunity to avoid that problem from the outset with this rules petition. CNS and my other clients have recommended several amendments and one additional rule that would require the electronic filing system and the clerks of court to provide for public access to electronically filed records upon receipt by the court, independent of and prior, undelayed by any time requirement for subsequent processing for acceptance or rejection. Adopting this proposal would ensure that reporters and citizens generally retain the same right of daily access at the courthouse to new filings, new electronic filings, that they currently enjoy with paper.
Mr. Drebs, I'm looking at page 4 of Judge Wirtz's filing of February 10, 2016, which is at the Courts tab 30. And he writes, CNS seeks amendment to provide that electronically filed documents be publicly available immediately before review and entering by the clerk. In the paper world, this is what he writes, the clerk receives new filings in the mail or in a basket placed on the counter. It is not common, nor is it encouraged, for members of the public or the press to go through those filings before the clerk reviews them. Indeed, there are strong reasons not to allow it, including the clerk's responsibility for safeguarding all papers filed and shielding confidential filings from public access. New filings are not noted on CCAP and are not placed in the paper court file until the clerk has a chance to review them. We should have asked that of the clerk, but we can ask her. Although there may be exceptions in some courthouses, this is the best practice. So he says, best practice is, it may be violated hither and yon, but shouldn't be happening.
Well, I did not review Judge Wirtz's comments ahead of time. From what you've read, I don't know what specific circuit courts he's speaking of.
Right.
I was speaking specifically to Milwaukee County Circuit Court, which is visited daily by CNS reporters. Not every courthouse in the state is visited on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. They come to Dane County several times a week, and they call in advance and let them know when they're coming so that they can gather materials and try to be as up-to-date and current as possible when the reporter comes, including filings that were made that day. So we are generally experiencing daily access when we request it and when it's necessary, and the Milwaukee court staff have gone out of their way to accommodate that, as have staff in other large cities across the country, to make CNS reporting even possible. And it's relied on by law firms and commercial outlets across the country who need daily, timely access to new filings. This is nothing new. We're only trying to prevent deterioration of that access as the courts inevitably move to electronic filing. The news media certainly agree that courts and the public will greatly benefit from electronic filing by avoiding the cost of managing and storing the large volume of paper records that the justice system generates. But those efficiencies should not come and need not come at the expense of timely public access to new filings. Delays of several days for acceptance do not occur on paper documents. There may be stories about that, but in the electronic world, the experience has been that becomes routine. And acceptance is not something that's currently a delay in access to
things on paper. How do you deal with the federal record? Do you just pay for access to PACER, or what do you do with the
That's
federal?
Right. Well, CNS includes federal filings in their reporting. Our firm gets a daily report from CNS, and it includes all the federal filings. They don't have to visit federal courthouses every day because they can read the complaints on PACER and provide their summary news reports.
Okay, so they get access to PACER, and then you get access from them.
Right. Well, we have PACER access as well, but we rely on their reporting. For state courts, they visit the courthouse every day to get the reports, at least the larger ones. In Wisconsin, so far, that's only Milwaukee. They'd like to come to Madison.
Does CNS want to become some type of a modified user and pay fees so they can read what's online?
They have paid fees in the past. They've even provided electronic equipment to courthouses so that they could afford to provide daily access.
But that's where was that done?
A courthouse monitor in different states where they had,
but not in
where
Wisconsin.
Not in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Where they had difficulties in retaining same day access as it went to electronic, and they stepped forward and funded a monitor so that there could be an electronic inbox in the courthouse. And it's important to note we're not talking about access from your living room. We're talking about reporters taking the initiative to come to the courthouse where they have historically had the right to see new filings, and we're trying to make sure that's maintained as we move to electronic filing.
How does that work as a practical matter? Do they just come in and say, I mean, I probably should know this, but I don't. Do they just come in and say to the clerk, I want to see everything that was filed today?
They generally call in advance. They have relationships with the clerk's office. I mean, in Milwaukee, they know they're going to come every day, and so they have a box where they keep new filings available to the reporters when they come. It's not just
every
for CNS,
filing.
It's for any journalist.
Okay. So every filing that's done any day, other than maybe juvenile or
mental health commitments,
right,
or things like
that? The ones that are publicly available to anybody, they make special efforts to make sure that somebody who wants to come to the courthouse for daily access can see what was filed that
then
day.
Then every day, I mean, this is just, I don't know, from the clerk's perspective how it works. So every day, every document filed or every new filing or what, and then the media pays $1.25 a page for every possible piece of paper that's filed every day?
They do not purchase everything that's filed. They purchase what they want. They may write summaries. This is, you know, CNS provides some full complaints you can order from them, which they've paid for, but they only recover costs doing that. They don't profit on that. They profit by writing summaries of the new filings or cases or appellate rulings, and it's a news service people subscribe to. But the arrangements, they make special arrangements in the largest municipal courts across the country to largest municipalities to have daily access. And so far in Wisconsin, that's only done in Milwaukee. But, you know,
I just think that's kind of interesting because no one else would be able to say, you know, I want to see everything filed, so please just photocopy them and put them in a box, and I don't want to pay for them unless I actually want to take them. It's interesting to me.
That's
a pretty good deal.
I'm not sure you're understanding.
There's
pleadings that come in during the day. They know the reporter's coming at the end of the day to see the newly filed complaints, so they may sit in that box before they're moved on for processing. I don't think doing that delays the processing in any way. If a clerk wants to get to that project today, or maybe they're working on yesterday's, it's just an arrangement so that they know somebody isn't just going to come up to the counter and say, I want to see everything that was filed today. This is something that's prearranged, and they have taken the initiative to work out arrangements with the clerks so that they can have daily access in a way that does the least disruption to the clerks' normal flow of business.
How does the
and
clerk know
well.
What they're interested in?
Well, they know that there are a significant civil matter. They're not going to come and look at small claims filings. They want to see the significant filings, but if you've looked at the CNS daily reports out of Milwaukee, it'll have, I assume, most of the full fee civil filings that day. There's tons of auto accident cases. There's a few. There's occasionally a defamation case I learn about on there, but mostly it's just your run-of-the-mill civil filings. And they have an audience for this public information. And they've always been able to provide it on a daily basis. And they want to continue to provide it on a daily basis and not lose that opportunity as we move to what should be a more efficient system. We're asking users to pay for this system. We just want to ensure that we don't take a step backward in the process.
But I think that that's an important thing that you brought to us for our consideration, and I'm sure the court will carefully consider it when we get a chance to address this further. Thank you very much.
I have a couple of questions. Your comments at the outset indicated that you were representing not only courthouse news service, but individual newspapers. Is that
That's
correct?
Right. Yes.
How does this affect the ability of a reporter from an individual newspaper? How does this proposed rule change affect the ability of an individual reporter of a newspaper to get access to same-day filings?
Well, they don't provide as comprehensive of reporting of new matters as a news service devoted strictly to courthouse matters would. But, of course, they want to bring people the news on a timely basis, as timely as possible. So if they learn of a significant new filing in their readership area, they send a reporter down there, and they want to see it, and they want to report on it. In some states, when they moved to electronic filing, that was no longer possible. All of a sudden, it's in process, and it can't be produced for them to read at the courthouse. And that's been a problem, even for daily newspapers having to wait. You have to contact the party's counsel and try to get it from them. Some counsel are actually reluctant to provide pleadings to reporters because they lose a privilege. That's not part of the court process. If they file it in the court and the reporter reads it there, they're immune from any liability if there happens to be an error in the pleading that falsely defames somebody.
So what's your solution?
My solution
is... I understand what your problem is, or you think your problem is, but what's your solution, Mr.
The simple solution is to provide in the courthouse a monitor for an electronic inbox.
Provide what?
A monitor, a computer, that people can look at new filings on that computer in the courthouse. We're not talking about internet access. We're talking about people who take the initiative to come to the clerk of court's office, and instead of asking to see a paper complaint over the counter, they ask to, or wait their turn, to see the new filings on the electronic monitor. It's worked well in states like Nevada and Georgia that have addressed this concern, and it's worked in individual jurisdictions in other states where CNS has taken the initiative to make arrangements for that kind of immediate access that their subscribers count on.
Thank you very much.
Let's see if I understand it. If it's electronically filed, you want it to be put right on up at the court access.
That's right.
Computer. If it's not electronically filed, but it's paper filed, then what do you want it to do? Be in that basket so you can look at it?
They have different arrangements or arrangements with clerks in different jurisdictions, but generally it's a drop box where the paper filings of that day are kept in case anybody wants to see them.
So what language in this petition would you subtract or add?
Well, in the 801.18 sub 9A, a slight modification to say upon submission, electronically filed records have the same force, and then also add are subject to the same right of public access as documents filed by traditional methods. Not to go to the head of the line, just to maintain the same. And then a separate proposed rule that would say directly, the electronic filing system and clerk of court shall make provision for public access to electronically filed records upon submission, independent of and undelayed by any time required for subsequent processing for acceptance or rejection.
That would be perfect, wouldn't it?
I would put it right there, yes.
Thank you. The practice here has been in the John Doe that it's almost automatically sealed, period.
Documents filed under seal are an entirely different subject.
Right.
These are public documents that are filed publicly and intended to be made public upon request.
But no one checks to see if it should be sealed or public. Automatic. Why can't they just have an automatic rule at the trial court? It's automatic until the clerk can look at it.
Well,
I mean, I know you don't want that, but
well, the proposals often come back that it's just a matter of efficiency and we can maintain same-day access, but as soon as there's a problem at the courthouse, all of a sudden they're behind. And then they're working on the day before's filings, and then something else happens, and they're short-staffed, and somebody's ill, and then they're working on two-day-old filings. And pretty soon, your reporters are coming in and asking to see current filings, and they're being handed three-old pleadings. And that's not the kind of access we've always provided to the public and the press in this state, and it's not the kind of access we'd like to see become standard when we're paying for efficiency.
You touch upon an issue, and that is same-day access to records. You say in your comments that you want to preserve the same-day access to the public, that electronic filing can result in significant delays in access awaiting process to acceptance. You even say it denies the right they currently enjoy to same-day access. Those are notes I took of your comments. That brings me back to an earlier question posed by Justice Ziegler regarding the foundation of our authority to be here today, and that is any change that we engage in under 751.12 shall not affect substantive rights. You've, in your argument, it sounds a bit like you're trying to frame this as a substantive right of the public to have same-day access to public records. Is that what you're doing?
Not at all. I don't think we're trying to change any substantive right. We're trying to maintain an existing substantive right.
I'm sorry. I inartfully asked the question, and that is that you perceive the proposed rule as potentially changing the current substantive rights that you possess. That current substantive right is same-day access to public records. Is that what you're arguing, or am I missing?
I can't point to a specific rule here that would have that effect. But the experience in other states has been that the process of acceptance can lead to delays. Acceptance of electronic filings can lead to delays that were not experienced on paper. Mm-hmm. That a move to electronic filing can actually delay the whole system in terms of timely access to records. And that raises concerns under First Amendment and common law, because these are substantive rights of the public to monitor their court system.
So what
thank you very much.
Timely daily access is an important part of that.
If we do not have some process to ensure same-day access, are you advancing the premise that your substantive rights would be infringed upon or may be infringed upon by enactment of this rule?
I wouldn't, the rule might have that effect.
That's pretty fancy.
The rule might have that effect if it is implemented in the way we've seen in other states, where the process of acceptance of electronic filings has delayed the time they become available to the public significantly beyond what it was maintained on paper.
So you prefer not to make a constitutional issue out of it, but it could be.
It has been in other places.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bob Barrington?
Good morning.
And then there were three.
Good morning, Justices. I'm Bob Barrington. I'm the managing attorney in the Dodge County District Attorney's Office. We were going to try and save some time, we thought, by bringing us all up here to address a few things that have come up and then to answer any questions if you should have any.
Very good.
This is Catherine Kepsel. Attorney Kepsel is with a six-person firm that has offices in Beaver Dam and Mayville. She, I think, could certainly address the concerns about the small firm in La Crosse. And this is Lynn Ron. She is the clerk of courts in Dodge County and has had a lot of experience with all kinds of e-filing.
Okay.
We're here simply to say that we're in 100% support of these changes. We all know what it's like to live with one foot in a paper world and one foot in the e-file world, and it's a very messy place to be. Attorney Kepsel could certainly talk about it from her perspective. Couple things really briefly. You've had some questions about, well, what about the guy in Outagamie County who is going to file something in Calumet County? Interestingly enough, in our experience, as attorneys who are based in other counties have found out that they can e-file in Dodge County, in my particular case in criminal cases, we've had people embrace it. We have a Dane County attorney who comes to Dodge County with her iPad, and she thinks it's absolutely fantastic. We have Milwaukee County private bar attorneys who e-file in Dodge. We also have Washington County that I'm aware of in terms of criminal cases. As to training, what we've done in Dodge County, completely outside of CCAP, actually, is we've scheduled a series of training sessions, not just for attorneys, but specifically for their staffs. And we have invited them to come to Dodge County. I think we have 3 days and six trainings or something like that set up in the next couple of months. And one of the things that I did was I went into our database. I pulled every single defense attorney who has been a party in a criminal case in Dodge County in the last year to make sure that they all got special invitations to come to the trainings.
What percent of them are public defenders? What percent are public defenders?
What percentage of our cases are public defender cases?
Or the number of, you said you went to the attorneys, so you know whether they're public defenders or hired by the public defender.
I actually didn't drive it down that far. I simply looked to see
Okay.
Every defense attorney who had filed.
Do you have a guesstimate of what percent are public defenders?
Perhaps Mrs. Ron has a better idea of that.
My guess would be from 40%.
I'm sorry, if you don't talk into the microphone, I can't hear you.
My guess would be 40%.
Are public defenders?
Correct.
And private counsel hired by the public defender and the 40%?
That's encompassed in that
60% would be private counsel.
It might be closer to 50%.
50-50, okay.
50-50, yes.
All right. Thank you.
I also believe that Mrs. Ryan could talk a little bit about the media access issue that we just had because, again, we're on the ground doing it, and I think we have addressed the situation very well in Dodge.
Good. That would be good to tell us about, please.
Yes. My name is Lynn Ron. I'm the clerk of courts, and I have to respectfully disagree that electronic records are not as available as paper records. When the electronic record is accepted by our office, filed, it is available. We have public access computers. Every county has been provided a public access computer by CCAP. We have several. The documents, everything is available. As soon as we file it, it is available there. We have news medias come several times a week. They don't ask us anything. They look up their own cases. If they need copies, they pay for them. But they do not have to bother our staff or ask our staff really many questions.
How long does it take to accept an electronic record? So if I filed it at 10 o'clock this morning, when would your office have accepted it and put it on the public file?
It takes approximately anywhere from 1 to 5 minutes to process a case. Now, that doesn't say that as soon as you submit it that someone from my office accepts it. We're not that fast. We can't constantly be watching. But as soon as we notice that there's something there, we accept it.
Do you have a system where if I filed it at 10, every 3 hours you check and see if it's accepted?
My office does not have a time system like that. We have clerks assigned to watch for particular cases to come in. We have groups of clerks, so there is a group that will watch for the criminal cases to come in, a group that watches for civil, a group that watches for family.
When a document is, there are terms being used here, filed and accepted, and when a case becomes a case, when under the e-filing system does a case, does a document become filed as a case?
When the clerk has accepted it, when the court has accepted it.
Under the old system, when did a document that someone walked in the door become something that would be a case subject to public access?
When the clerk, physically stamped it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, in other words, it's not a case in a case file until the clerk makes it so, right?
Correct.
And so when the clerk makes it so, it then is open to public access via the computers that all people in the public, media or otherwise, have access to?
That's exactly correct. And if it's a paper document, we have to run it through the scanner before it can get into that case. An electronic filing is instant.
I have a question about that. In Dodge County, which prides itself on being a paperless county, and I think you should take pride and have done a terrific job, what percent are scanned and what percent are electronically filed in Dodge County?
We have all of our criminal cases for the last 2 years have been electronically filed because we're doing a pilot with the district attorney's office.
Okay.
So all of the criminal cases,
mm-hmm.
4,000. Small claims, civil, family, the percentage is very low because it's not mandatory. Mm-hmm. It's just not being utilized the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of a single occasion when, out of the 4,000 cases, anyone from the press has been denied access? That concerns me. I want to make sure.
I can't. Go ahead, Bob.
Quite frankly, most of the local news outlets contact me. They are on an RSS feed with CCAP to watch for criminal cases to be filed. When a criminal case is filed, I'll get an email. Bob, can we get a copy of the criminal complaint in X case?
When you say filed, you mean accepted by the clerk's office.
Yes, I'm using those two words interchangeably, actually.
Right.
And consequently, I will then turn around, hit a button in my computer, and I will email the criminal complaint to the news outlet with a disclaimer, of course, saying that it's nothing more than an allegation. I've never had a problem.
When you do that, does it have metadata showing what can be retrieved from that?
I don't believe so, but I wouldn't be the right person to ask.
Well, if you send it electronically and you got electronically, I think it
would show it. It goes as a PDF.
Well, if it's a PDF, it's just a picture. It doesn't tell the development of the document. So, thank you. That's very helpful.
Have you spoken? Yes.
Thank you. As Justice Ziegler noted, we're not here to discuss the benefits of the e-file system. It is difficult with one foot in the paper world and one foot in the e-file world. At best, it's inefficient. At worst, it's confusing and frustrating, both for me, for my staff, and for my clients. I will say I have never had a client balk at the e-file fee currently. Anecdotally, I can tell you I've had folks say that from me describing it, they thought it was going to be much higher. I had one woman say a couple of months ago, I thought it was going to be $100, but $5 plus $250, I'll pay that.
About 20?
I have not discussed 20, obviously, with my clients. As
so
that
it's five that you've discussed.
Currently, yes. I can tell you in my own anecdotal experience the amount of time that I would spend with mailing, with postage, photocopying, the delay in filing a new summons and complaint, that is recouped both in my time and in the costs. I would estimate for pretrial motions, I would probably, for something resolved on a pretrial motion, it would probably be a total cost savings of my time of 1 hour being able to electronically file, and that is passed on to my clients.
Both Judge Koshnick and something he had written in, and I think in Judge Stalk, they really disliked the concept that there'd be both paper filing and electronic filing. They couldn't think of any system that's worse than having both operating at the same time. And that's what you have said, too.
Yes, I strongly feel that that is the least efficient way to do it. In multi-party litigation, I receive documents by e-file, by email from opposing counsel that is not e-filing, but that is providing me a copy at the same time that they fax it in, and sometimes by fax.
Right, and scanning isn't the same as e-filing.
No, scanning is not the same as e-filing. Scanning is something done internally in our office.
And internally in the clerk's office is done, but it's not electronic filing. And so what we have now is, if this system is adopted, we're going to have electronic filing for four types of cases and paper filing for everything else for a while.
That is my understanding.
But at least it will be consistent over the four types of cases, so you can adjust your clients for those cases. And then if all goes well and we work out any jiggles that are in the system, hopefully we can do better as we move through the rest of the cases.
That's my hope as well.
Justice Prosser has a question.
May I ask the clerk, if this were a complaint in a civil case, it's accepted when it's stamped. What do you do, if anything, before it is stamped?
We review to see if there's a summons and a complaint. We see if the filing fee is accompanying it, and we file it. We check to see if what a class code there is, and then we file it. Then we have to enter it in the computer, scan it.
Okay. Do you read the whole complaint or anything?
No, sir.
What about the concern of redacted materials, or let's say if there were some sort of a case, a family case, in which children were named by name, mm-hmm. would you want to make sure there's redaction or something before you stamp it?
Our office will file what is presented to us. If we notice something that possibly might be concerning of concern, we will bring it to the party's attention. We don't redact.
And under redaction rules, as I understand it, that wasn't your responsibility.
It's not.
That's correct.
Redaction.
That's correct.
So I want to make sure when the complaint comes in, you're checking to see that there's also a summons or some other document. You're just A, B, C. Is that it?
Well, the clerks generally will look to make sure that it's correctly filed in the right county,
yes.
Which
that's a good
sometimes
one.
Comes to us, and it should have gone to another county. But generally, it's not for us to read through the documents to make any decisions on whether the documents are correctly filed. It is our position to file the documents.
Well, is there, in terms of the electronically filed, say, complaint, are you doing anything different there than
no.
you would do?
No, we just look to be sure that there is a complaint, there's a summons, and there is a filing fee. And again, if there's something very blatant, that like the wrong county, it could be rejected.
It seems to me, if I understood Mr. Drepp's testimony, he was arguing that somehow it's taking longer to get this thing into the system if it's electronically filed. And you're saying what?
I'm saying my experience is my own county, Dodge County. My experience is just the opposite. Because when an electronic filing is accepted by the clerk, it's instant, that it's on the computer, and it's instantly accessible to the public. If I have a paper filing, my clerk has to enter the information manually, scan the item, then it is at first available electronically. And that's all the record we keep is an electronic record now. So, again, it's my experience in my county that it's just the opposite.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have just
a
follow-up question. One of the writings, and a lot of the writings that we have, indicates that this change, this new rule, will permit the clerk to engage in quality control. That's the phrase used. To ensure that documents submitted to the court are in proper form before they are formally accepted. This is a follow-up to Justice Prosser's question, because I just wasn't sure. This is a footnote, but my glasses must be failing me because I can't see what provision it attends to or it's attached to as a footnote. But the footnote says it permits the clerk to engage in quality control to ensure that documents submitted to the court are in proper form. You didn't write this, so you may not know what is meant by allowing the clerk to engage in quality control. But in response to Justice Prosser's questions, I'm left with this impression. Number one, you think electronic filing may get information to the public and press more quickly. But number two, it also seems to me that once something is brought to the clerk's office under the old process, you would stamp it, then you would enter it manually. and still, if it's a paper filing, and scan the items. And stamping, of course, is filing, right?
Yes.
In the proposed process, the document is filed when it is accepted. So I'm just trying to get filing is stamped, and when you bring it, when it's brought to you in paper form, do you do any quality control other than stamping it?
No, other than review to make sure the basics are there.
Again, the same basics that you were talking about, the right county, the summons and complaint, and there's a filing fee?
Correct. Okay. And I apologize,
Can I help you think of one possible answer to Justice Bradley's question? I'm not sure if this is an answer, but if under the current system you have a paper copy and people are in many counties taking the paper copy and scanning it in a scanner that may be of a variety of levels and working orders, and then the scanned copy becomes the document, perhaps it's that extra step that people have some concern about. What if a page gets stuck, or what if the scanner isn't working, or what if something goes haywire with that? That's all eliminated now. It's actually ready and available without that extra step in the process. I mean, scanning, at least my recollection of scanning, was that when we started doing that, it took some extra time. In fact, we had to hire an extra person, I think, to be a scanner and scan the documents. So there is an extra bump of time, and who knows how that scanner is performing. Do you think that might weigh into that commentary there at all?
It might. Every time you add steps, when you have to do something, there's always the chance for an error, for something to happen. Every step you take, there's another opportunity for something to go wrong.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you all for coming up together. I think it was very helpful to the court to proceed this way, so thank you so much.
If I recall, you were here on March 15th of last year also, so thanks for your diligence and attention.
Let's not make it March 15th of next year,
Marcia,
too, right?
Marcia Mansfield. Marcia Mansfield.
Oh, she was here.
Marcia's gone?
She had to leave.
All right. Okay. Going back to our three presenters, would anyone or two, if you're quick, like to make some comments given what the questions the court has had? Judge Koshnick?
Yes.
Good. Very good. Thank you so much.
First of all, I've discussed Justice Prosser's question with my lawyer, and I have an answer for you.
That's always good.
3A in the introductory language requires those individuals to register prior to filing documents in circuit court. So if you're a judge or a justice, you're probably not going to be filing documents in circuit court, and so you would not have to register with the system, even though you could be considered a licensed attorney in Wisconsin. It's 3A.
It doesn't say that, though.
Well, prior to filing.
Prior to filing
is what it says. If you don't file, you don't need to register.
That's right. Well, and as an additional matter, when lawyers register their CLE credits on the state bar or with the state bar, we have that. That's also a way to register for the e-filing system. So most lawyers currently are registered for e-filing through the CLE system. So the minority of lawyers are not going to register. They'll register before they file a case. If you ever file a case, you don't have any CLE credits, you don't have to register for the system.
But once you file the case, you don't have to keep registering. You're
right.
Up to date.
That's right.
And you're good to go.
That's right.
Thank you.
And on the rollout issue, I wanted to point out that the federal system rolled it out district by district, and the vast majority of states do a rollout county by county or city by city as well. We're not aware of any that did it statewide all at once, flip the switch. There may be one or two, but we're not aware of that. As part of the quality control that Justice Bradley asked about, I think what may be discussed or mentioned there, it relates to labeling. Right now, when a lawyer files something electronically, they need to click one from a select list of field descriptions like motion, and then they can type in something additional to compel or to disclose. The clerk that reviews the electronic filing reviews that to make sure it's properly labeled. That's actually happening now when we're paperless in Jefferson County. Something's filed and scanned or filed electronically. One of the things the clerk does is to make sure that it's correctly labeled, mainly so that the judge and the parties can find it more easily when looking through the index. And I think that skipping out the scanning step, which Justice Ziegler talked about, is where we're going to have a lot of savings as far as personnel time is concerned. As far as the concerns expressed by the representative for the newspapers, Judge Sankovitz has looked into this in Milwaukee. If you're interested in exactly what happens in Milwaukee, he is prepared to give you a detailed response to that. And so I'd invite you, if you have questions, I can have him come up. But those are the points we wanted to address that have come up since the presentation began. I'm happy to take any other questions from you.
I would suggest you consult with your lawyer. I don't think the word user as defined in subsection N is consistently used throughout the petition. And I think that parties is not always correctly used in this document. So I don't really want to go through it where I've marked it all up. Right. But I would suggest that be reviewed again.
All right.
And what I was talking about on time and effective electronic filing is subsection 4, paragraph E. The expanded availability of time to file shall not affect the calculation of time under other statutes, rules, and court orders. And that's where we talked about the 72 hours instead of, but there may be others relate to that.
Thank you very much, okay. Judge Kosnick. Judge Sankovic, I would like you to come back for just a minute because you want to ask
question.
Judge Kosnick first? Okay. Sorry, Dave.
I think it was Judge Wirtz who said that you folks accept the access to justice amendments. But I'm a little slow here. I'm not sure I know exactly what those amendments are.
It was legal aid. Mm-hmm. It was a letter that was sent within the past couple of weeks.
Yep.
Or is it legal action?
Which tab?
February 19th.
Yep.
Legal action of Wisconsin. And they have proposed statutory language on page 1.
That's by a 36 in your book. Try that.
Okay.
They basically want to include e-filing fees under the indigency waiver provisions of 814.29.
This is from legal action on February 19th.
36.
Okay. All right. Fine.
The other thing is we haven't talked about John Ebbett's letter. And as usual, Mr. Ebbett always has an interesting take. And he says, okay, so this is to help the users of the system, and this is not to impose on self-represented people. So he says, why don't you use half of these fees to fund legal services for users of the system? And put it into WSTAP, which we've done before. We did that in filing for, what was it, Pro Hoc Vici.
Well, that's a policy decision for the court, and I'm sure it will receive some discussion when we have a chance to talk about this. I would like to hear from Judge Sankovitz if any member of the court has a follow-up for him, because there was a lot of interest, and I understand you looked at access for the press in Milwaukee under e-filing.
Yes. Long story short, business as usual. Milwaukee County accommodates the press because that's our way for our constituents to know what we do. So if a case of some notoriety gets filed, even before, after the file stamp, which John Bear likes to call the kerchunk, goes on that piece of paper, and before we have a file folder for it, if there's some member of the press who wants to look at it, sure, we'll give them a copy. Jim Smith, you know, our deputy chief clerk in Milwaukee, he's happy to make a photocopy for a member of the press to get that out there as soon as possible. And I think what we've heard here from two clerks, and it'd be the same experience in Milwaukee, with electronic filing, it'll happen even faster.
So if it's electronically filed, you give it to them immediately?
As soon as that as soon as we know it's there, there is a document which a court, which a clerk can view on a screen, and we can print it and give it to a member of the media. Or if it's in a position, because the case has been processed, that it's actually available to view through the kiosk, we'll say, go out and look at it on the kiosk.
But it's going to be slower electronically.
Faster.
No, because if it's paper, you can give it to them before the clerk accepts it. File and you can, well, that's what
it, you, the clerk can't give that away just something said. They haven't accepted.
No. The time it takes for it to get into a file folder is a lengthier period of time than the time it takes for us to register it electronically and put it on the kiosk to view. Technically speaking, it's a tie. If the reporter walks in with the person filing it and they wait for the kerchunk and Jim Smith says, go ahead and take a look, that's just as fast as if the reporter's in the office waiting near the monitor on the clerk's desk when the yellow band comes across the top to say, there's a new filing, and the clerk pulls it in and Jim Smith says, print it out, and they give it to the reporter. So technically it's a tie. But in the ordinary course, I mean, Mr. Dreps, I really wonder how this happens, but supposedly somebody from this news service comes to the Milwaukee County Courthouse every single day and looks through at least 30 large claims civil filings and looks at all of those filings to find out this news. We're not going to hold them and wait, you know, for this reporter to come so we can get these 30 cases off to their branches. But supposedly they're looking at this every day. We're going to give them the opportunity to do that even quicker because as soon as they come in, they go in the kiosk. They don't have to go to some box. They don't have to wait for them to be pulled out of the process of being put in files and put them back in the box so they can look at them. The most important thing, I think, to think is this. We have accommodated and we have encouraged this interest of the fourth branch to look at our processes without having a rule. For all these years, we've never had a rule. We don't need a rule now. And we actually have experience. Like I said, I've had 100 cases myself, but we've had more than 1,000 cases in Milwaukee. We have yet to have a reporter complain because it's locked up in some electronic process. I don't know why it's been bad experience in other states, but there's not a single fact in front of this court which would suggest that'll be a problem here.
So you need a kerchunk before you get the paper filing, and you need a kerchunk in the system for electronic filing. Is
yes,
that
in
right?
fact, that red ink you see on the top of a document on the electronic filing system, that's the electronic kerchunk.
Mm-hmm. And what percent of the filings in Milwaukee are voluntarily electronically filed?
Very small.
Very small. 1 to 3%.
Could be as low as 1. I doubt it's higher than 5.
Thank you very much. Anybody else have a question?
We have a transcript of the last hearing. How do you spell kerchunk?
Yeah, leave that to the court.
I would spell it. Yeah, this is. I'm not used to being in a courtroom where there's not a reporter. Because if there was a reporter here, I would have stopped before I said anything else, leaned over the reporter and said KER-CHUNK, and then there's no doubt. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you all very much for a huge amount of work on a very, very complicated proposal to change how we do business in a very fundamental way in the state of Wisconsin. We have a lot of talented people who are part of our staff that we have not heard from today, but we give them our great thanks too, without going through them name by name, and there are a number that have provided great assistance to the court. So hopefully we will get through the other two petitions and begin to discuss this one at open administrative conference. Now, for my colleagues on the court, if we came back instead of at 1:30, at 10 after 1, could you all make that, or will that not work?
No. There's a judicial education meeting today, too, I think, that's going to last till 1:15. I would like...
Okay, well, then, just a minute, Justice Abramson. Then we will come back and begin with 1504 at 1:30. And I am really going to try to hold your feet to the fire on time limits. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do about that, because mostly you all are very good and we are very bad. And I'm not sure how to fix that problem exactly. But we'll start at 1:30.
I would like Jean Bousquet to get the spreadsheet as soon as possible, because I can look at it during the break. Okay?
We are adjourned. See you all at 1:30.
You.